So in that way, you can get this broadcast via the terrestrial transmitter at 90.7 FM, or hopefully soon via SoundCloud and live streaming, and via KBOO.FM, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagrang, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest today is Michael Clare, who's a professor of peace and world security studies at Hampshire College. And his most recent book is A Race for What's Left. And we're going to talk about a recent article he wrote about the double dip oil row. Well, Michael Clare, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning, Per.
Yes, it is morning here. I guess it's afternoon where you are, but What's happening? The oil prices keep dropping. I think they're down to, what, $40 a barrel now or close to it?
That's about right.
And what's the reason for it? We sort of, a lot of people expected that, you have the cheap oil is gone, and what they're getting at is the expensive, hard-to-get oil, under the oceans and under the tar sands and all that, and people expected that the price of oil would keep on going until it was no longer affordable, which sort of happened. But then all of a sudden, everything broke. What's going on here?
Okay, well, I certainly was among those who thought that the price would keep rising, but it turned out I was wrong, like so many other people. What's happening is a combination of factors. On one hand, you have more oil being produced in the U.S. through fracking from shale oil in Texas and North Dakota and elsewhere. So you have a lot more production coming online. And the Saudis and the other Persian Gulf countries are trying to fight that by pumping more oil themselves, which brings the price down. They're hoping to kill off the high-price oil that you were talking about. So they're pumping more oil at the same time. So you have a lot more oil entering the market. At the same time, demand is not skyrocketing like everybody expected. You have a turndown, a economic slowdown in China. You have economic doldrums in Europe. So nowhere in the world exactly is there a bright spot in terms of demand. So with slowing demand for oil and this vast reservoir being pumped out every day, prices fall. And that's what we're seeing.
Well, we do know that the supply of oil is finite. It's not limitless. And it seems kind of very wrong-headed to, when you have a finite supply, to ramp up production, which goes for a lot of foolish stuff.
Well, you know, the supply of oil is finite in a sort of theoretical sense, but it's an addictive drug as far as I'm concerned. And to feed our addiction, we can keep turning more and more things into oil. So there's no immediate likelihood of running out of the stuff as long as we're prepared to cast the environment to hell and not care about climate change and just keep drilling into the earth. If we're so desperate, we're not going to run out of oil anytime soon.
Do you think it's but aren't we running out of places to put the waste? You know, in other words, you know, back in when that book, The Limits to Growth, was written, they talked about supplies of different things. And one of the things that was limited was the places, well, sort of like garbage dumps. You run out of places to dump the stuff after a while. Is that
Well, the biggest dump is the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest dump. And we can continue to burn oil and coal indefinitely, but, you know, we keep pumping out the carbon into the atmosphere, and sooner or later it's going to turn the planet into an inferno.
Hey, guess what? That's what's happening right here.
That's what's happening right now, yes. Yeah, so that is the limit to growth, as I see it, but not the shortages, scarcity of oil itself. I think we have to see things through a new light. I think, as you say, it is the waste products that are the limiting factor.
Yeah, and well, because of the effects on climate, people are saying that, well, yeah, we got this oil, but we're going to have to keep it in the ground.
Exactly. And more than that, we're going to have to develop alternative sources of energy. And that's happening on a very large scale around the world, and it's catching speed. It's gaining momentum around the world. More and more people are converting to renewable forms of energy, and as a consequence, the demand for fossil fuels is slowing down and eventually will be reversed. I think the time will come in a decade or so when the demand for oil, coal, and natural gas will peak and will decline. So you'll have peak demand before you'll have a scarcity of the material itself as we move increasingly to a green energy planet. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen at the same speed all over the place. Some states, some parts of the U.S., like California and New England and the Pacific Northwest, where you folks are going to make the transition sooner than others. And other parts of the country, like Texas and the coal-producing states, West Virginia and Kentucky and so on, are going to resist making the change. And eventually their economy will suffer because they're not catching on to the new economy, the new green economy. That's what's going to happen. There'll be slow adapters and fast adapters, and the fast adapters are the ones that will flourish in a hotter planet to come.
Well, let's go back to this surge in U.S. shale production. Mm-hmm. What I've been reading, a lot of different observers, is that, a shale well, it depletes very quickly. You know, the first year, you know, you get a pretty good return, but it really drops off. And what happens is that the production drops off. So if you want to keep things going, you have to drill another well and another well. And so pretty soon they're spread out all over the place. Plus the companies that are drilling, they got very cheap loans, and they're a loan risk. You know, now they have to pay back their loans. And what they do is, if you got a well in the ground, even if it's not producing a whole lot of oil, you keep it running because that's you need the money to pay your loan. And this is how long can the situation like this last?
So far, it doesn't look like it's going to come to a stop. What's happening is You know, the drilling for shale oil is a little different from other kinds of drilling because you have a lot of smaller companies, a lot of speculative smaller companies in it, and the ones that can cut their costs and drill cheaper are going to survive, and the ones that can't cut their costs are going to and can't pay off their bills are going to go bankrupt. So there will be failures, there will be bankruptcies in the shale formations, but some companies that are managing to drill to and frack at lower cost. Now, of course, all the workers are having to take cuts in pay, and all the auxiliary services are taking big cuts in pay, and a lot of companies are being service companies are going bankrupt as a result of all this, and the towns are suffering. But some companies are still making a profit, and they're going to keep drilling. So that's the story.
Well, they've gotten their costs. They keep, getting more efficient at scraping the bottom of the barrel. But how long can that?
The thing is that the shale formations are vast. Mm-hmm. They're just immense, and so there's a lot more. There's a lot more petroleum tied up in these shale formations, and if you could keep reducing the cost of drilling, you could drill for a very long time. And so I think it's a matter of when the demand is going to dry up, not when the supply is going to dry up.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the way I was talking a while ago, I will admit, but it seems that the companies have found ways to extract very efficiently. Now, this is very different. The shale drilling is very different than tar sands and deep sea and Arctic drilling. Those are large industrial enterprises, multi-billion dollar investments. Those are in deep trouble because they can't cut their costs. It's so expensive to drill in the Arctic or to deploy a rig in the deep waters of the Gulf of Mexico that if oil is selling at $40 a barrel, there's simply no way they can make a profit. So those projects are going to start to collapse, and that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any idea how low the price can go before shale drilling becomes unprofitable? Even a rough guess? I mean, like, right now it's about $40 a barrel.
Well, $40 a barrel is too low for some companies.
Mm-hmm.
So for some companies, it is already too low, and they're going to go belly up. But companies that can get their costs down can still survive in $40 a barrel oil.
What about 30?
A lot more companies will go belly up.
I'm just trying to get a handle on, at what point do they all give up? But maybe we don't know that.
We don't really know that.
Uh-huh.
Is the answer to that question. And a lot of that will hinge on demand. If at some point demand rises, there's another factor here is that the price of gasoline is not following the price of crude oil because the refiners are not reflecting the reduced cost of crude. The refiners, for their own reasons and their own control of the market, you haven't seen a drop in the gasoline price corresponding to the drop in crude.
Mm-hmm.
So if the price of gasoline at the pump begins to drop to reflect the lower price of crude, and demand shoots up because people drive more, wow, cheap gas, that may alter the equation, but that's not happening.
But it could. But I'm trying to look look a little further ahead and see where this is all taking us. One thing you mentioned in your article is that You know, even the, you know, the big companies are, well, like Exxon, you know, they had like a 50% drop in their last quarter profits, and Chevron had a 90% drop. So, and big oil is they're halting these, they're not going out for these new ventures, which I guess are the high cost ventures. So what are they left with? They are left with, as far as the world at large goes, we're left with the, you know, the major producers of this, what we might call the easy oil, which would be Saudi Arabia and Iran and Iraq. And I guess Russia's oil is pretty cheap to drill. That's what I've heard anyway. But
yes,
that's
yeah,
about
well,
that, it.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening. And there are a couple of other factors entering the equation now. Believe it or not, Iraq, with all of its troubles, has managed to increase its production substantially this year. Iraq is now producing 4 million barrels a day, which is twice what it was a few years ago. And if the Iran nuclear deal goes through, that's a big if, and Western companies come back into Iran and sanctions are lifted, Iran is going to be a major big producer. So, and both of those are low-cost producers. So you're going to have a flood of Middle Eastern oil into the market, and the demand internationally is just not there. So the prices are going to remain low for some time to come. And I think some of the Western companies are going to be forced into mergers. I think the number of big companies will begin to will become fewer in number.
Well, I read an interesting little article that is by a guy named Finian Cunningham, writing for the Daily Reckoning, which is kind of a financial website or something, and he is saying that President Obama gave a kind of an ultimatum to the Congress, saying that if they block this nuclear deal with Iran, it's either the deal or war. And most people interpreted that to mean that that Israel might launch some kind of a preemptive strike, or that Iran might start building a bomb. But what Cunningham is saying is that it could be that Iran will be producing its oil, they already are, and selling it not in dollars, and that this is just one more kind of a chipping away at this dollar supremacy, and that it might actually bring about the, well, I don't know about the collapse of the dollar, but it would really kind of, say, cripple the dollar. Is there anything to that?
I think that's way, way, way too exaggerated, because I don't think the market for Iranian oil at non-dollars is big enough to harm the dollar, which is, you know, $1 trillion operation worldwide. So that's not going to happen. What is going to happen is that if Congress nixes the Iran nuclear deal, you know, and overrides a veto by President Obama, and Congress imposes more sanctions on Iran, which is what the Republicans are calling for, that's all fine and good. But the other countries in the coalition, the European countries, Russia and China, they're not going to go back to the sanctions. They're going to say, we had a good deal, we signed this deal, we're happy with it, we don't agree with the Republicans in Congress, we're going to go back trading with Iran. So that's going to be an enormous black eye for the United States worldwide, and those other countries are going to start trading with Iran at our disadvantage. That's the major outcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take Iran's oil and add Iraq, I mean, they're sort of an ally of Iran, and then add the Russian production, those three countries, if they start, I guess they already are selling their oil in whatever currency they want. And lately I've been reading that President Putin has been talking with the King of Saudi Arabia. Who knows what they're talking about, but it's... I don't know. I mean, there's this whole this Russia-China-Eurasian kind of a combine that they're working on with pipelines and roads and high-speed rail and everything. And that is being exacerbated by, our little adventure in Ukraine, which is just driving Russia closer to China. I mean, what do you see that leading to anything?
I do see Russia and China moving closer together economically and militarily, and I think that's a bad outcome of all of this. I agree with that. I think China has very ambitious plans, their new Silk Road strategy of building pipelines and highways and railways across Eurasia to Europe. I think we have to see how the Chinese economy performs in the next few months and years. Right now, they're slowing down, and it looks like their economy is in some trouble. So I don't know if they're going to have as much money as they once thought to undertake all of these enterprises. And that's partly why you started out talking, Per, about why the price of oil has dropped. And one big reason is that the Chinese economy is in trouble, and Chinese consumers are buying less oil. So you have what we've been talking about, this influx of supply from Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, at the same time that the Chinese economy is slowing down, and that's really what's behind the drop in prices.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that occurs to me, in your article, you write about how we're finding, there are more electric cars, hybrid cars, and so less oil is needed. You know, it's like the addict doesn't need as big a fix as he used to, but we still need oil for some things. It's hard for me to see how you can have, say, electric airplanes.
We're going to need oil for some time to come,
mm-hmm.
No question about it, but I can conceive of a world with a lot less oil consumption, and then in the not-too-distant future, in fact. When I say that, I mean within decades, not within years, but within a few decades, I think we could see a transportation system that transforms itself largely to electrical power.
Well, that would work for rail, certainly. They have electric rail in Europe now all over the place.
Cars mm-hmm. driven by electricity mm-hmm. or hybrids. Plug-in hybrids that mm-hmm. get charged up each night, which would use much less oil. I think that's the future we're looking at.
What about ships at sea?
Ships at sea will probably need oil for some time to come, but you can power ships by sunlight. That's certainly within the realm of planning. You could also power ships. The Navy is beginning to work on this with biofuels. No reason you have to use petroleum. You could use biofuels to power ships.
Is there what kind of biofuels are we talking about there? I mean, because
biodiesel.
Well, is it made from corn or just from?
No. You could make it from algae, from bioengineered uh-huh. algae to produce biodiesel. The Navy is doing quite a bit of research on this.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force has begun flying planes with biojet fuel, and all the new planes will be capable of using biofuels in the future.
Well, I know in your article you say that actually what's bad for big oil may be good for the planet. So why don't we try and put this all together now? We have falling demand, which can keep on falling up to a certain point or down to a certain point, I guess. We have the price keeps dropping down to some certain point, and we have all kinds of dirty oil production is being phased out. So how do you see this, say, 10 years or 20 years into the future?
Very hard for anybody, you know, to make predictions like
I
that.
I know.
I certainly did predict the oil price drop that's been so huge. That's only been in the past year, so dangerous to make predictions. But I think long-term, it's safe to say that the world's economy will increasingly be powered by renewable forms of energy, mm-hmm. and that will increase year by year. So at what rate that'll happen, that's harder to say. And there will still be a need for oil in this period, but I think the demand will get less and less. And this means that it will become unprofitable to invest in things like tar sands and Arctic oil. I know President Obama, I think he was out of his mind, approved drilling by Shell Oil in the Arctic waters of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Why he did that, I don't know. Maybe it's to counter criticism for the other things he's doing. I don't know. A terrible bad idea in my mind. But I don't think anybody is going to follow Shell into the Arctic. It's so costly, and they're never going to make a profit. It's a crazed thing to do. That kind of thing is going to come to an end, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder if it'll happen in time to forestall really severe, you know, the climate is changing right now, and it keeps getting worse and worse, and I just wonder, will these good things happen in time to stop us from reaching a tipping point?
Well, I don't think you should talk about a tipping point, Pierre. I think mm-hmm. things are going to get worse before things turn around completely, things will get worse. I think what we're seeing now is just the beginning. There'll be a lot more bad things happening before things are stabilized.
So what are some of those bad things? So I can prepare for them.
I think the temperatures are going to start getting to be very hot all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to kill off a lot of plants. So food production is going to become much harder in most of the world. It might be easier in Siberia and in northern Canada, but I don't think that's going to make up for the loss of food in other parts of the world. So you're going to have food price spikes, food riots, food shortages, water scarcity. All those things we're seeing now will be multiplied.
Let's see. A caller asked if Shell's Michael Hubbard coined peak oil just to manipulate the prices.
Oh,
I think he's talking about Hubbard's peak and... I would say no, but go ahead.
Oh no, that was way. He coined that term in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what he had in mind.
And he was kind of right about U.S. production. He seemed to think, I guess, that nuclear power would kind of take up the slack, which hasn't really happened either.
No, and he did not anticipate fracking because. Mm-hmm. The decline in U.S. production, which continued until about 5 years ago, has come to an end. In the past 5 years, there's been a 50% increase in U.S. production, totally unexpected by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So things change.
Well, I really have to wonder how long that can go on, but who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been talking with Michael Clare, a professor at Hampshire College, author of The Race for What's Left, and really doing his best to keep up with all the trends and things going on in the oil industry. Thank you very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Pierre.
And stay tuned for Air Cascadia on your radio station.
Yes, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. A couple minutes in front of 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes, it'll be Flashpoints at 10:15 with guest today host, guest host today, Kevin Pina. The American Psychological Association responds to allegations of providing cover for the CIA's torture program, and Flashpoints continues coverage of Haiti amid the continuing controversy surrounding parliamentary elections. And at 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with local poet and critic David Beispiel about his collection of essays, A Long High Whistle. Chris Andre is coming up next with Air Cascadia. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO is a co-sponsor of the Double Mountain Brewery and Tap Room's Great Bottle Roundup and Street Party on Sunday, August 23rd in Hood River. To lower their environmental impact, Double Mountain is working to reuse their bottles. More information about participating in the Bottle Bring Back may be found at their website, doublemountainbrewery.com. Jeff Allworth kicks things off at 11:15 for a talk and signing of his book, The Beer Bible. From noon to 6 p.m., there will be music provided by Left Coast Country, Green Neck Daredevils, and Mile Marker 6. People that bring back bottles for the Bottle Roundup have a chance to win prizes throughout the day. That's on Sunday, August 23rd in Hood River. More information is available on the right-hand side of the KBOO homepage at kboo.fm.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday,